Welcome to the Producer Bootcamp Podcast, where we lift the veil and question the film industry at its core. Here, we simply no longer accept what we've been told to accept. We don't believe in the notion of art versus commerce. We believe art is commerce. I am your host and creator of the Producer Bootcamp, Paulina Lagudi. Hey guys, hope you all are staying safe and staying healthy right now. I know we're in some pretty crazy times, especially for all the freelancers out there, everyone whose jobs and productions have been put on hold due to this coronavirus. It's pretty crazy. So I know we've got some extra time on our hands, and I decided to bring on a guest who is really, really great. His name's Rob Smatt. Really cool producer. He has totally speaks our language. He gets it when it comes to, not just a producer, but also a director and writer. And he just gets it, understands what it takes to get a movie made and have it actually make some money and contribute to the film market. So without further ado, I'm just gonna let you guys come to your own conclusions and, listen, see if you agree, don't agree. If you don't agree or have some further questions, type it up in the Facebook group. I definitely want to hear from you, and let's get a bit of a discussion going. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Producer Bootcamp Podcast. I'm your host, Paulina, and I've got a really fun guest today. His name's Rob Smatt. Rob, give yourself an introduction. Let us know who you are, what you do, and yes, where you're at right now, what kind of cool projects you're working on and all that.
Well, I have been called quote-unquote fun by podcast hosts, specifically you. So I guess that's a good adjective to start off with because it's not my words, it's yours. I am very fun.
And
and I would like your listeners to keep that in mind if I start to drone on about minimum guarantees and that sort of thing. But just
that
remember,
to me is fun.
Yeah, okay. Okay, good. So I made the film The Last Whistle, which is currently on Netflix and came out last year. We did a day and date release with a middle-sized distributor. And it's a football movie. It's got a very niche audience. It's very much sort of a Friday Night Lights a marketed approach, not necessarily the movie itself. But that was what we were going for. And it was my first feature after graduating from USC. I went to USC for the cinema studies and screenwriting major minor rather than the production major, not because I didn't want to be in production, but because I didn't get into that part of the program, which their mistake, not mine.
Totally.
But everybody in production didn't really know what they were doing anyway. So I learned a lot more in cinema studies anyway. So that was sort of my first one out of the gate, and everything since then has been a real wild ride. I mean, getting that project put together was crazy. The goal of The Last Whistle really was to bring back the investors' money and then, inspire a second movie from the first one. And that pretty much happened, which I got very lucky about. And then that project fell apart. So it's like, it's been a very interesting ride ever since the movie came out, but it's really been what I think is very successful, and I want to make sure that we keep, we're keeping on our distributor, make sure that paying back the investors thing is still staying on track. And I'm getting excited for the next chapter, and have a little documentary in the pipes that I'm gonna, I think, self-distribute, because I want to learn more about sort of the absolute most direct path approach. But anyway, that's a little about me, and that's where I all started out.
There's so much there I just want to talk about. I'm like, I don't even know where to begin. Okay, so I bought your movie and I watched it.
Oh,
I didn't know it was on Netflix, but I bought it on Netflix. But I always liked it. Sometimes also too, I just like, I'll purchase movies that are indie films, even if I don't watch them, just because I really want to support indie filmmakers. Because I'm like, I hope someone does that for me. But I bought it and I watched it. And I remember, all because I found you, for listeners who don't know how I found Rob, found him on Reddit because he had, and we'll get into that, but he had this great post saying, you know, I'm 24 years old. I made a movie for $100,000. It did a theatrical release and outperformed films with big stars and names. And we're planning on, recouping our investment. And I was like, oh, this is great. This is everything that I love to talk about. And so I bought your movie and I watched it. And right from the get-go, I was like, I've seen movies that I remember have been advertised on podcasts and whatnot of like, oh, we did this for super low budget. We did this or whatever. And the production value, and my husband's a DP, you know, I produce and direct, like production value is where I know production value, you know, and yours had it. I mean, I was just so, I don't want to say surprised, but like 100,000. I mean, I've worked on films that have been around that budget, and what you pulled off in a specifically like a sports film, which is difficult. Most people I think would believe that it needs to be at least like 500,000, you know, to be able to get that scope. And I think that's so big, but so smart. You did that for that budget, knowing you could pull that off. I think sometimes people make the mistake in the $100,000 range where they think way too small. And it just is like, the story's too, like everything's so small where it's like, okay, well, you should have just made this for 10,000.
Right.
Because now 100,000 is too much, or they think too big and it's like, okay, so you gave me a really knockoff version of like a $500,000 movie. So now there's a real, like, you have to be so honest with yourself and what you can pull off. And there's such a happy medium there. And I really think you found it.
Well, thanks. Yeah. And I've seen so many. Too much cinematography, and I think that I'm sure your husband could attest to this. You know, green directors will cinematography as a crutch if they don't necessarily know how to, And it's like, okay, it's their script. Yeah. They're not willing to kill their darlings, and so they'll just go to the DP and they'll say, make it beautiful, you know. And so my approach was really opposite to that. I think that my DP Brian's fantastic, and he and I had been friends for a long time before going into this movie, and I knew that he was going to be the secret weapon. And so I told Brian, I apologize in advance. Our resources are, but they're not. And with, I want to make sure that you have all the tools you need to get the minimum that will please you. And if we have that, then, I will be okay with it. You know, I may I may try to get a type of shot in here. I may try to, imply that I want this certain approach to scene for story reasons. But I'm never going to come to you and say, all right, make it look better, because that's not the point of the movie. The point of the movie was really, let's have a compelling story and motion, visuals. And so that was the idea. Yeah.
Yeah, no, so it was really great to see. And yeah, so I watched the movie, and that kind of put you into a different box of, okay, this person isn't full of shit.
Thank you.
You did it. Yeah, you did it. Like, really great. So after that, because I know what it's like kind of after the process of making a movie, and then you're going into sales and everything, and you just kind of feel like, shit, I can take on the world, right? Like, I know what makes this happen. Like, I know kind of how this whole engine runs now, and I can see where the holes are and where people mess up. I have my own opinions on that. After this whole experience, where do you think most indie filmmakers really shoot themselves in the foot when it comes to their movie being successful, as in, and I say successful as in something that can elevate their career, or something that allowed them to have a relationship with investors beyond that film? It wasn't like they're scared to go back to them, or that investors writing them all the time. Like, for instance, with my film, we have not recouped 100%, but in the first six or the first year, we recouped just under half, and we're over half now.
Sure.
You know, and it's only been since November 2018, February 2019, we ended up on Showtime, and being on cable did so much for the movie. So that was something where I'm like, okay, cool. There is a difference between, you don't necessarily have to make all the money back in 2 years.
Well,
that can be down the line, but it at least creates momentum.
On that note, I would just say the number one thing is communication. I don't think I've ever been unhappy with someone that's a good communicator with me. It's, it's someone who, even if they're doing the job, isn't communicating with me while they're doing it. So they kind of drop off the face of the earth. And so that's really been my goal with the investors was, and as I, they know, it's, there's a lot of them that we've got, I think, 8 or 9. And so it's really, it is a lot of moving targets. It is, me, especially before the movie came out, it was me being awake at night thinking, okay, these two are going to hate me forever if I screw up. These two are going to be okay. These three really like me no matter what. I was doing that math in my head. But it's all about communication. It's all about saying, hey, here's a very, this is my estimate. I'm not positive about these numbers, but this is the best that I know right now. And the more you get at that, the more that they just say, hey, you know what? We're none of us bet the farm on this. We're, and now that we're in pandemic, it's like, honestly, don't bother us for a few months. Like we've got bigger fish to fry. We're investors, but it's just that with that, it's communication. But in terms of like the overall like shoot in the foot moment, I think I actually, it's kind of funny because you said, after production's done, I think one of the biggest shoot in the foot moments is a filmmaker, even if they're not the writer, but especially if they are, it's a filmmaker that can't take a note. And I
Oh,
think the Last Whistle would
so
have been a
true.
mess if I hadn't been able to take notes on, it's like I took notes on script. I took notes when we were shooting, and it still was like, okay, this is like a 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10. It's an 8 out of 10 for people that like football. It's a 6 out of 10 for people that like indie film. It's like, okay, and that was my goal the whole time. Is it's like, listen, I would love to be a 10 out of 10, but that takes time, excellence, perfection. I know what that takes. I want a movie that
Well, it's a
people like.
journey,
It's
right?
a journey.
Well, that's it's a journey, and that's the thing too, is like I totally understand that mentality. My first feature film is a family film. Did I ever think my first feature film would be a family film? No, it's a story. It was an open door in the market after I spoke to different distributors at the time. I had the script came to me, I restructured it. Just there's so many things happen where I'm like, all right, this makes sense for this, but I'm not trying to
Exactly.
make an Oscar movie, right? Or I'm not trying to make like something that blows up the box office. You're absolutely right. I think people can get really tunnel vision and almost be slightly delusional in their vision as the whole scope. And it really hinders the entire experience, not just in the storytelling, but then the execution all the way
Absolutely.
into
Oh, yeah.
sales. So really interesting. Speaking of financing, which I think you did something really smart where you took a $100,000 budget roughly and split it to 8 or 9 people. I don't know if that was intentional, but it at least allows the risk of the investors to be a lot less. I don't assume that everyone was equally distributed, or how
Yeah,
did you find your
it
investors?
was
I assume they're all private
piecemeal.
equity.
It was all private equity. I mean, I started with some small production companies, and they were, they took the pitch. And what the funny thing was, their response was, "How are you gonna? We don't think you can pull this off." Like the response was exactly what you said, where it was like, "You're not. This is gonna be a piece of crap." And I didn't, have a proof. I mean, I had a proof of concept. I had a sizzle reel, but I didn't have proof that I could pull this off. And but I knew that I could. And it wasn't it was because I had honestly, it wasn't because I had failed, but it was because I had been on teams that had failed to do so many times, and I had really put together that flow chart of here's where this will fail. And my whole thing was just, we just got to make a medium movie, a medium movie. And some people are going to love it and some people are going to hate it. And as long as people love it, that's all that matters. And luckily now it's been cool to sort of see, just random people on Twitter talking about how much they like it. Now that it's on Netflix and everywhere, it's like, that's, I'll never meet those people. I'll never know those people. I can't influence what they think about the movie, but the hate mail has been surprisingly small. And I'm thrilled with
Oh,
that.
that's so, that's
Yeah, it
great.
hasn't. I was like, okay, it's going to be 50-50 or it's going to be a disaster. And it's like, no, it's like, 80% of people that are going to go to social media and talk about the movie go there because they liked it rather than they thought it was a
That's
waste of money.
awesome.
But anyway, yeah, when it came to the investment, We were a little over 100,000, and so it started off with over the course of about 3 or 4 months, we went to each of the private equity after I kind of exhausted the production company possibilities, or they all kind of, ghosted me. And just went to each of those people, and a lot of them were located in Texas, and a lot of them like football, and so it was kind of the whole thing of like, hey, here's a movie I think you will like, and here's what we need to do it, and here's how we're going to put it together, and here's sort of the expected returns, and and really coming in with a strong business plan, and really just
That's good.
leading off with my number one goal is getting your investment back, and I know that that's not going to make an Oscar winner. And I think that this was a thing that, when we talk about Reddit, that'll be sort of one of the big, big things that Reddit had a problem with was, what do you mean you didn't put quality in the driver's seat? And it's like,
Well, I think quality is a pretty
yes,
multifaceted
exactly.
conversation too. Yeah, so that's kind of the point
But
there.
anyway, it
Okay,
started
so
with like a we had one investor come in with like a more than average amount, and then two come in with kind of less than
yep.
average, and then once we had half, then we went to another one, and then he said that he would match, and so then we were like, okay, we're almost to the finish line, and then at the end we had one that we didn't really think about at all, who came back and said, hey, after all, I changed my mind, and so that was kind of that was how it all kind of
Wow.
came together.
As far as you, because the last podcast episode I did was about
Yeah, I
I'm
lost
sorry.
you after you
Okay,
said the
yeah,
last
there's
something you did.
yeah, something. Sometimes there's calls that come in. So what I was gonna say is after you did the production company route. Then, when you went to get private equity, how did you? Oh, because the last podcast episode I did was about funding. Your pursuit of these investors, because there's so many different ways to finance, did it start with necessarily like someone you knew, like maybe family, for instance, which I think there's nothing wrong with doing that if you know that your family can do it and you approach it like a business. But does it start with family and then family's like, hey, actually, I know this guy, or is it people that you've had relationships with before? Because I believe you're from Texas.
I'm from Texas. Yeah, it's a combination of the two. I am proud to say that I don't have any sort of like, rich uncle or anybody like who can just kind of give it all to me, and I really did have to work for every penny. And it was all, and I think that this is a huge part of investing that people don't realize is if you go through the whole phone book, you're going to get 0 hits. But if you go through your entire contact list and you just ask for people who might know somebody who can make an introduction,
That's the thing is who knows
yeah.
someone, and I think that's where people get stuck is they're like, well, I don't know anyone with money. And it's like, right, but you know someone who knows someone with money, and it's not always about like, okay, they have
Well, and
money.
I'll say too that if we even if we went into these offices and got a rejection, I would always end with, okay, hey, I can see that you're not thrilled about it. That's totally okay. If you know anyone who might be thrilled about it, please just let me try to pitch them, because you
Great.
can see that I don't, the issue here isn't my business pitch. I have a this is a solid, and I think this is the kind of the kickers. It's like you know that I know what I'm doing, but it's just not right for you. So it in that scenario, an investor will say, oh, you know what, that's you're right that it you know I wouldn't feel bad passing you on to my friend, because you know how it is with investors. Every one of their friends is rich. Every one of their friends has,
Oh,
and
and everyone
I'm
has
just
different
joking,
needs. No,
but
but
it's
it that's
everyone
true.
has different things they're looking for sure.
Yeah, that's so true. And do you know what? Like, especially for, that's such a good point about you really need to know yourself and you really need to be honest about your pitch. You need to be honest about your script. It's kind of like what you were saying. You always took notes, to be able to have the confidence to say, I knew my pitch was good and it wasn't them. That confidence is what allows you to continue to get investors because you can then say, do you know someone else who would? I think it's
Right.
very clear when a lot of producers, especially starting out, aren't solid about their pitch as far as the business point of view. They can't answer the hard questions, which aren't really hard questions. They're just simple questions of like, what's your plan to get my money back? What's your marketing plan? And when you're kind of wishy-washy, you're just like, well, we're going to hire a distributor or a sales agent. And, at a festival, they're going to pick us up for X amount of money, we think, because this one film did it. And then when they start poking holes in that plan, they fluster. So I think it's really important to for everyone to like be really honest about your pitch. And if you feel like you've got a lot of holes in it in your first couple pitches, revisit it. So that way, yeah, you do have the confidence to say, do you know someone else who would be interested in this? Because I know it's you and not me, you know? okay. This is really great. I want to jump a few steps down, but it also, I think a lot of these steps should be involved in development and pre-production, which is marketing. I think a lot of times people think about marketing and distribution way, way, way too late. And they shoot themselves in the foot, where most businesses think about that along with day one with sales. So, did you have a marketing plan in your business pitch, already thought out?
Absolutely. The marketing plan was honestly the business pitch. It was this idea of here are our audience demographics. Here's where the niche is, I think, for this movie. Here's who isn't getting, here's the table in the restaurant that's not getting served, as far as I can tell. And it was, obviously it's kind of like, old sports, like middle-aged sports fans. It's kind of like the target audience for Last Whistle. And so it's like, there's so much going on in Hollywood with diversity and with movies for very specific, diverse audiences, no matter which age, gender, orientation, there are now movies for everybody that has any sort of diversity. And I was like, okay, well, these audiences are really, really getting well served, especially on the indie level. The studio level's got some work to do, but the indie level, it's like, oh man, this is a renaissance for representation. And at the same time, I was kind of looking at like, okay, well, what about like, boring white people movies? And it was like, it's like some people in the very generic audience are kind of getting left out here. And this wouldn't be a hard, it's not a hard niche to target, not because it's huge, but because it's getting zero attention, it's that like the Red Sea, Blue Sea thing where it's like, hey,
totally,
there's blood in the water with movies that make diversity their main focus. It's not that we didn't have that in the movie. That was a big part of the movie. Mm-hmm. But this idea that we can make a movie that's not about, we can make a movie for a niche audience that is not, their principal interest is not a civil rights issue or a rights issue at all.
Where did you find this? What was your plan to target this audience in your marketing? Because when I think of that specific audience, I'm like, okay, where do they hang out that allows me to market to them with the least cost possible? That's just not Facebook.
Well, they hang out with each other, and there's a lot of word of mouth, whether it's, not necessarily retirement homes. I think that's a little older than our target demographic, but just, in terms of, just the clubs and their friends and bars and, and football games, it's like, it is, if you don't have good word of mouth, no amount of money of marketing is going to help you. And so that was sort of the idea. And now that, I get pictures every month and it's Walmarts that just leave the DVD playing in their TVs because,
awesome.
It's like, it's perfect for the people that shop at a Walmart in, Alabama. It's like, it's, and so it's like, just, again, I knew that they were out there and I knew I could reach, a lot of Friday Night Lights fans over Facebook ads, which is a very, easy way to go. But my whole goal with the marketing side of things was that I needed to sort of plant seeds and then hope that it would, manifest
kind
from
of
there.
Kind of
like a chain reaction.
Organic growth.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. Like, I can only generate enough heat to start a chain reaction. I can't heat the whole thing.
So when you guys did your day and date theatrical release, was that something, because I know typically with theatrical releases, specifically day and date, they always target the 10 major cities for cable views and they tend to be on the coasts. Did you guys restructure that to focus more on maybe the Midwest and those demographics that really speak to your audience, or
that was
that
the
something
idea.
That was slightly out of your control?
It was more out of our control, but the distributor did accept a list of cities where we thought we could get people to theaters. And the only ones where those were super successful were LA and Fort Worth or Dallas, actually, because that was where we did have, we did get them to put a Dallas theater in, which
that's great,
which was good because that was where we filmed in Fort Worth and, The DFW audience was very supportive. The Fourth Film Commission, very supportive.
That's awesome.
But the rest of them were a little more wherever they could get the cheapest rental, the four walls that were the cheapest. And I always thought the price tag for a four wall was every seat in the theater for every show, for the whole showing for each day. But I think that what I've learned in this process that kind of surprised me was it's really just a flat rate, and it's something that they have worked out ahead of time, and it's something that I found to be very surprising. That
Interesting.
and then on top of that too, the funny thing is the four walling is very cheap compared to if you were just someone that wants to go rent a theater. I'm shocked that movie theaters, or at least before the Rona, movie theaters. Oh my, I can't believe I just said that in public.
Oh,
Movie
funny.
theaters have like this base $2,000 charge if you want to rent a theater for 2.5 hours.
That's
And
so cheap.
I think it's super expensive because I the
Oh, I thought that
most
it's way cheaper than what I thought it would be.
the most that a theater is going to, well, it's not, an Alamo Drafthouse or like a dine-in theater is going to be
Right.
2,000 to 3,000 plus a food minimum.
Right.
But in terms of just, the basic movie theaters in like a 70 seat auditorium, it's still like $2,000. And I was going to the smallest, cheapest theaters because there were a couple, there was one that went, an investor wanted to throw a screening for everybody. And, I was like, okay,
Yeah.
I'm going to try to get you a good deal. Let me do it. Don't do it yourself. And,
Right.
not that it made much difference to him, but I wanted to do a good job, and I wanted to show him,
Yeah.
my best effort. And I was shocked. So it was, the fact that they've, the most that they're going to make from a sold out showing of the Avengers in a 70 seat auditorium is going to be 70 times the price. Let's say it's 10 divided by 2, because they only make a ticket. And so at most they're
Right.
making $350 from like a 2-hour screening. And so it's like, I'm saying, how are on a Thursday night not going to have that auditorium full charge just because I'm sure.
Well, to me, right. Well, that's what I'm saying is that's why I was like, oh, that's so much cheaper than what I thought, because I'm thinking, one, theaters have no money, right? Like, that's kind of the big thing. And two, like, who one like I never see these theaters like really being rented, so I'm in my mind I'm like it must be an astronomical number. Like I know obviously at the studios,
Oh
the
no,
Raleigh
they've
studios,
all,
we had a
yeah,
screening.
Raleigh, right. They have
Yeah.
their own, because they do a lot of, like, the
Yes.
around will do or used to do, like church in a movie theater, and or they'll do a Fathom event, so it's like they
Yeah.
for rent. Guess their way to keep the revenue up is to make sure that no one's dropping below that movie, even though it's on people like me, like screw it. But anyway, knowing how much they charge for one screening, I was shocked that some of the four walling fees were lower than that for a whole week, and I think
Yeah.
that was a nice thing to learn. And that was something when it came to the day and date release, it was like, hey, I don't want our distributor going and blowing the bank on this process, and
Right.
and just taking all the money in the end, because they're making their cut and that's it. And so I was really, really focused on making sure the distributor wasn't going to spend irresponsibly. And I
Yeah,
think
that's
that
what we focused
that's
on too.
yeah. And so in the end, they spent some money on a poster, they spent some money to fix up our trailer, and in the end, I think our marketing expenses came out to 15 or 20,000 for the whole thing. And
Yeah, it's pretty good.
so, yeah, hopefully, and of course they try to, they always like to expense a lot of other things. So the idea is going to
Yeah.
be, especially this coming year, making sure that we get some accounting for what's going on there.
That's super huge. That was a big thing when we were looking for, our distributor, that we had someone that was very, very transparent.
That's
And that
great.
was referred and everything. And thankfully, I mean, there's so many things that like I've just against sales agents, just as like an idea of, I think their position is almost entirely obsolete unless they have some sort of like output deal that is something that just you just cannot get getting on your own that's worth something. But that was a big thing for us is, and thankfully, like we, they always answer. So many people don't answer, and we thankfully always get quarterly reports, which is huge, and the accounting is very transparent.
That's great.
It's amazing to me how many people, just that basic thing of communication and getting a report is just like non-existent for some of the big guys.
Yep.
And that's the thing with this industry is like tons of filmmakers and producers. It's full of so much glamour and glitz and all these things, like the idea of it, I guess. And like names and titles just completely blind people to the red flags that are just waving in their faces.
Yeah. And I will say that a lot of your work with distributors will be totally dependent on name. And I think that the best way to, if you know you're going to a distributor, and this was something that after my AMA, a loan out corp, or it was somebody from a financing group who was telling me a lot about, hey, when you go to package your next thing, you know, there's, you know, easier ways to do it than having to, you know, kind of do all the back end stuff. Obviously you had to do that for your first one, but for moving forward. And so it's like, I always kind of, you know, I don't always talk about what I learned from him, but I think that it's still helpful to know that's kind of how it works down the line. Once you've got proof that you can produce and you can do this. And it's just this idea that if you can attach, you know, a certain star at a certain, you know, budget level, a certain rate, then you can take that straight to a distributor. And sometimes they'll just give you a deal right then and there, you know, and it'll just
be,
and then you do loan financing, and it's riskier, and you have to have a much better framework for your production company when it comes to things like that, because you are taking out a pretty huge loan at that point.
That's what we're doing for my next film.
Great.
So it's kind of funny, 'cause I immediately thought that we'd be making like a micro budget and doing everything like on our own, just to like, everything just kind of felt that that's where I wanted to go. And we wrote this movie, and then, you know, which had all of those parameters in mind. And then it just kind of got attention that then got me managers that then kind of leveled itself up, and then we ended up writing something for this exact process. And it was really interesting to me, because that's what solidified that whole idea of,
that's great,
there are multiple tiers to this industry. Oh no, it's awesome. And I definitely still want to make like a micro budget thing, but I have not necessarily just a movie. I think there's so many, the outlets of what people are watching, how they watch them, micro budget stuff. There's just different formats now that I think speak differently to people.
Yeah.
But it's cool to know that once you've done it, the doors really open up, not necessarily in a way that is like, oh cool, I'm getting all these movie offers now. 'Cause that's 100% not how it happens. Like, yes, there have been new opportunities, and there's also been new things that have fallen through, just like anything else. Mm-hmm. But you have just such another level of understanding and experience, if you can actually take that stuff away from the experience, that allows you to know and have the empowerment of, even if all shit hits the fan and it doesn't work out with all these people, I still know I can create something that can then generate money.
Mm-hmm.
Because I at least know the game plan. I know the parameters that I need to work in to make shit happen. So I think that's really important for people to go through. And sometimes it does take failing royally on your first one, if that's what needs to happen, for you to learn, because, you know, like we said, this is a process, as long as you can learn from it.
Yeah, and the failing royally on your first one is one that I always try to, like, you know, fail small and then succeed medium. You know, you're never going to succeed big after a string of failures, but pick the moment whenever you don't want to fail. And then, you know, because there comes a time whenever you can't leave a project and say, well, that was a learning experience. Like, the learning experiences have to stop at a certain point, but you need them, but they can't stay with you. You know, there are always things that you'll learn on any project forever. But if every project's a learning experience, you're going to run out of people to support you at a certain point.
Yeah. Oh, yes. The damage done cannot outweigh the progress, right? Or like the wins, sure, as well. Like, yes, there's always going to be things that happen and that stuff.
So maybe
you're walking away from,
I mean,
every
maybe
project,
you've spoken to this on a previous podcast episode, but I think that something that a lot of filmmakers forget is that the most important thing they can do when it comes to packaging a project, especially if they don't have one, you know, starting off, is to have a script that actors will like to read and actors will like to imagine themselves and the characters. You know, you're almost writing that script for the actors more so than another writer or producer.
So true. Yeah. I have to say, more so recently, I did speak to this in another podcast when I was really honing in the fact that at the end of the day, story is everything. Like that's your nucleus, and your story has to be something that is compelling. People will forgive a lot if the story and the characters are something that they identify with and they can actually get into, and having actors that actually believe in it. I mean, there's nothing worse than watching something and you can tell the actors just phoned it in, or they're doing it because like their career needs help and they just need a paycheck. And it's this most terrible thing to watch because it completely takes you out of it. And yeah, like your actors are salesmen. That's the reason why like distributors put so much weight on them, is because the fact of like, that's your first barrier of entry for who the audience relates to. They're not relating to you, the filmmaker. They're relating to the actor and the characters first. Sure. And then you just hope by the end of it that they relate to the storyteller and the filmmaker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I guess what I was going to say was when it comes to the attaching actors, and when you go to distributors, the first question will be, who's in it? And a lot of it, what I very quickly realized was there is no framework for distributing a movie without an actor. And I think that it's not mm-hmm. because you can't do it. It's because it takes a lot more effort than a distributor or a marketing agency will want to put into it. They have a very yes. set framework for here's the actor, here's the trailer, easy, and done. Put his face on the on the poster and exit. There is no framework besides in horror movies necessarily for here's a creative marketing challenge for us to, you know, A24 can do that and nobody else.
Yeah, yeah. No, very much so. And it's kind of interesting because I've always been very aware of this, and that's obviously how it went for our film as well. But I've become oddly skeptical of it because I think, unfortunately, that's also the excuse that a lot of people and distributors make for just getting bad movies made. Yep. Is, yeah, you can have the genre, and yeah, you can have the actor. And the pretty poster, but unfortunately so much of what has diluted our industry and made it really shit is the amount of shit with just those three things that has littered the marketplace. And it left a lot of, and stupidly so, but distributors are, I guess, are humans too. Stupidly so, it caused a lot of them not to make their money back because they were just distributing bad shit because they had, you know, quotas for libraries and the amount of movie, you know, they just had slots to fill. So it's interesting because it's like, I think if you have a film, like maybe something that maybe you only have like a $20,000 budget or something, right? It's not that it can't be done. And yeah, it means that you can't go about everything the same route that everyone else is going with the actors and the poster and everything, because you don't fit that framework if you don't have a name. So you have to be even more creative and have your story be even better than anything else, and you really have to focus on those things and know that this is going to be something that you can't expect the same level of expectations, and again, like I said, go about it the same route
as those people.
I think that's also a difficulty.
If you're doing
too.
Anything for less than, you know, probably $50,000 or $75,000, you know, mm-hmm. I really don't think that a movie should be made for between $25,000 and $75,000, $100,000 altogether. I'm not really sure, but I think that there are like tiers for budgets at which movies should be made, and I think that there are no man's lands in between those. And I think one of the biggest ones is $250,000. I think that $250,000 is, and that was why I really set $100,000 is the mark for Last Whistle, and why even when we kind of mm-hmm. hit 100,000, I started saying like, okay, you know, I actually stop. Even if we have an investor come to us and say, how much do you want? It like no, actually, we need a maximum budget, and we need to stick to that because I want to pay back everybody else, you know. And if we go too high, it's like there is a budget that's too high for this movie. And I think that's, you know, I'm sure people would be like, oh my God, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And I'm sure people are like, wow, he's a genius. And people that think I'm a genius can follow me on Twitter and retweet me all the time. And people that don't can, you know, just tune out and come back for the next episode. But I think that when it comes to you should do it for this much, you should do it for this much. There's just like, if you don't know the difference, try, you know, learn, or again, tweet me and like all, you know.
Yeah, I think it truly, because I have to say, like, I very much agree. I very much agree. And at the same time, I also say, like, it truly freaking depends, because that money is so, again, the price of something is so subjective, because the price of something with someone who's friends with tons of actors, like $250,000 with Joe Swanberg, is a different $250,000 from like me,
Totally.
right? $250,000 with Joe Swanberg, he's got Olivia Wilde and Jake Johnson and this, that, and the other, and he's got deals from like
Right,
Panavision,
you
and he's
could
got
go
all these deals,
into
and it's
a
like when
ghost
David,
story, guy David Lowry.
oh, it's a ghost story, yeah. That's $100,000, like my ass, right? You know
Right.
what I mean? Like, yes, it's $100,000, but really, like, it's not. So I think it really depends. People who set out for their first film and they're like, I've got $30,000, I've got $50,000 or whatever, and I'm gonna make this feature, and here's the script, and this is the thing. I agree with you. I say, no.
Well, I the only
Because
thing
there's no market for
the
it
only
today.
space where
I
I would
mean,
say
unless,
yes for
again.
that would be a very specific niche audience movie. You know, don't go make a broad
Yes.
horror movie. Don't go,
Right.
you know, I think the indie film hustle one they always reference is the vegan chef. And it's like, you know, I don't know if like that would take some marketing, but like I'm always a huge fan of, and I think that documentary is a place where those budgets are really doing
Yeah,
well,
it has to make sense
is
for the
because
project. Exactly,
they
exactly.
like the ones that I've seen are like the Sriracha documentary, or like the documentary that the guy is doing about like a specific, like the Hitchcock 70, I forget the name for it, but he did the Hitchcock scene, he did the chest bursting scene, you know, it's like it turns him into
Well,
a
even
film.
Paranormal Activity, right? Everyone uses Paranormal Activity as like the example. And it's like, yeah, okay, the problem is no one really dives into what that movie did that made it so much money. It's not that it was made for just so cheap and it was a horror film. That wasn't it. It's a really good story that was blue ocean at the
Yeah,
time.
right.
That really got it allowed you to go. It's essentially what Instagram is today, right? And like TikTok and all that stuff. It gave you this feeling of, and reality shows. It gave you this feeling of like you're watching something very intimate and real that you shouldn't be seeing because it's like hidden cam footage or whatever. And it's like at home documentary. And they just told a really good story. It's not that scary. It's not like, you know, a masterpiece, but they went into the blue ocean. And so I think sometimes people undercut what really happened there is just, oh, it was a horror film made for as little as
Absolutely.
possible. And it's like, it was so much more than that. So that's where kind of like I say depends, because I think if you're the right filmmaker who has the right story and that budget absolutely makes sense for you, for sure. But I get what you're saying, whereas so many of these broad strokes people that just want to make these broad strokes movies because they've got a business plan and they want to make it as a little for as little as possible. I think,
It's
yeah, you
a
kind of
much
have to look
better
at
thing
things
to
and
do
say,
at
eh.
the 6-digit budget level rather than the 5. The 5-digit budget
Yes,
level
a hundred
really has to
percent.
be, and I think that there's something to be said too whenever we're talking about 10,000, 25,000. If you want to distribute a film, you have to have a lot of post-production steps that you do not know how to do yourself, and that's something that's my next project's going to be a documentary that's in that budget range, and doing a totally different. I'm going to go through the fiscal sponsorship route, and you know, basically production was so insanely inexpensive because the subject is a friend of mine, and all of our interviewees were within, you know, 500 miles of each other, and so we did like a road trip, and all the
Perfect.
equipment's mine, and you know, we paid for one
Yeah.
location for some reenactment shoots. It's like it's. The more of the jobs that I can do myself, the better, which is going to be the case for bringing down a budget for anybody, as you definitely know, being producer, writer, actor, director, or not actor, but everything else. And
Yeah.
that's the t-shirt I'm wearing right now is it says writer,
Oh, I
producer,
think I know
actor,
that. I have
director.
one
Yeah.
from
From Target. I saw the
Target,
shirt
so
and
I
I was
think I know the
like,
one.
this is
Yeah.
the worst thing I've ever seen. And then I looked at it for a second longer and I
I'm
was
gonna
like, this is
get
the best thing I've ever seen. And
it.
my agreement with my fiance is that I just can't do the actor. I can do everything else, but she doesn't want me to become an actor. So,
But not the actor. That's so funny.
but anyway,
Yeah, I know. Acting is a whole
the thing
nother thing.
about the budget is I think that a lot of filmmakers think that their whole budget is going to be their shooting budget, but they really neglect the fact that
Right.
if your shooting
Yes.
budget's super low, then your whole budget is going to be your not necessarily post-production budget, but everything that comes after production. And so it's like, yeah, we shot it for 10,000, and it's like you're going to need twice that to get it out there, because you don't really know how to edit. You definitely don't know how to do a 5:1 mix. Do you have friends that can,
Well, even the legal fees that are
Yeah.
necessary, there's just legal
And
fees and
then
even just copyright stuff that
and
needs to
errors and
happen,
omissions, and it's like, so I
Oh,
think
absolutely.
that it's funny to hear people talk about like, oh, the $10,000 film, and it's like 10,000 for, like, just say 10,000 for production asterisk, because if you do not take out a credit card and think you're just going to get it out there once you've finished filming it, because obviously it's really like with this documentary, it's going to be about Walmart. And so it's like I'm sitting here thinking like, okay, most of our budget is going to be this lawyer who can watch my movie and say Walmart's not going to sue you for this. Like that is every, because I can do everything else for free, almost. Production is done, and that wasn't too many thousands of dollars. And so anyway, and then E&O, it's like, okay, how the more that I pay this lawyer, the less E&O will cost, because he'll be able to tell them, hey, I don't think he's going to get, it's like, so it's just really important going into it to just make sure that you know what your contingencies are.
100%, and it's so I've spoken about budget and micro budget specifically on this podcast before, and my thought or my main answer is if you're someone who, I guess my thought or argument is it's not necessarily about the number as much. Like for instance, if someone's like, listen, it needs to be 30,000, like this is the budget, or it needs to be 50,000, this is the budget or whatever, I say fine. Or 10, say, let's say 10 or 15,000, make it a lot smaller. I say, fine. But maybe like just put that money in yourself. Like I'm more of the mind frame of save up that money and you be the single investor instead of trying to go get someone else's money to then invest in something that's a blatantly bad investment. That's my thought is like, I think investing in yourself is super important in funding some of your own projects, unless you've got like an airtight business plan, because I think it's really important for people to be in the shoes of the investor at some point. I really, really think that. And if you're gonna be gung ho about like, because I've helped out on films before where I'm like, you've taken $85,000 of this person's money or two people's money. You're gonna go back and ask them for 30,000 more because you can't make
Because I
this
can
for
already
you
see
are
you're
because we're already
outspending,
over
yeah.
budget. Totally. And yeah, to them, okay, they're out like maybe 50 grand each. That's still a whole lot of money.
Oh,
You
yeah,
know what
and
I mean?
I
Like, but
always,
in your
yeah.
eyes, you're looking at them like, oh, they're a rich
Well,
person. They
and
can
that's what
handle
I
it. And
was
I'm like,
here is
but
they
you
would
don't
say,
know.
there was this one filmmaker I produced for, and it would be like, no, he's just excited to see the movie come together. I don't think he cares so much about the money. And I was like,
Oh, that's so annoying.
now I now realize I was the one having all the phone calls with this investor. And let me tell you something, he wants the money.
Yeah, there's a reason why they're in a position where they can invest. It's because they do care about money.
Yeah.
You
And
know, they do care about
it's
money.
not
And I think
that,
it's important for people
and
to
I think
experience
again
that.
that, and this was the huge thing about Last Whistle for me was, and that was kind of the part where having all the investors for me was something I actually wanted, was it was like, listen, I've got this business plan for a $500,000 movie that we're going to make for 100. I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen, but everybody I've talked to and every piece of information I can glean says that our worst case scenario will be 100. So it's like I am structuring our budget based on our worst case scenario, and I really think that we'll have success. And I think that for our first 2 quarters, we've grossed 200,000, I think. So making
Oh, that's
sure that
amazing.
it all shows up from the distributor is going to be a battle down the line, but so far so good. And yeah, so really excited about that fact. And anyway, my goal
That's
was
awesome.
that if it is successful, and if and when we do succeed, that the investors come back and say, hey, let's do another one. And that had already happened right after we finished this project, and we had I was about to have the second feature all set up and ready to go, but it fell through for luckily reasons that weren't my fault. So but anyway, it's like it's
Yeah, but
the
that's
it
okay.
happened. The what I wanted to be set up for worked, because this investor could go to his friends and say,
That's
hey, here's
huge.
somebody that knows how to manage money and is responsible and a good communicator. And that's my goal.
Yeah, that's huge. Everything has to be kind of viewed through the lens of risk reward, you know? And if you're very clear on what the reward is, like you said, from the worst case scenario, and you can manage your risk accordingly, like that's the best, most simplest thing that you can do as a
Absolutely,
producer,
absolutely.
I think. Just to break things down to their most simplest terms. Before we kind of
Yes.
wrap it up, I want to just hear quickly, or have you speak to everyone about how you view Reddit from a marketing point of view, what you think it, what, how it helped you, you know, because that's kind of outside the scope of what we originally talked about with your niche audience and how they're
Yeah,
more word of mouth.
so I think that kind of the funny thing about the Reddit success has been that I'm not sure if the Reddit success turned into financial success for the movie, despite the huge amount of, the fact that, I had like, I think that my AMA had like, 20,000 upvotes or something like that, and a ton of attention and front page and, not to toot my own horn, but no, I'm joking.
No,
But
it's
it's
great.
with all of that, I try to think about it as if I had bought Reddit ads and created all of these impressions inorganically, how much would that have cost? And it's a good question. I don't actually know the answer because we didn't buy any Reddit ads. And I think the funny thing is that if I had taken that route, it probably would. I mean, I'm just gonna throw out a number of $5,000-$10,000, to get 20,000 upvotes, after the. Or, it's probably 30,000 and 10,000 downvotes, whatever it is. But, to get that much attention, you really do have to have a make a huge spend. And it's like, wow, if we had done that, seeing how this didn't really lead to huge financial returns, it may be down the line, it'll add to it. It gives us something. I just don't know what it is.
Well, it's do it does, and this is huge on anything is like it's getting you're seeing that it's being talked about,
Exactly.
right? Because we can't, that's the thing with marketing that's so tough. It's so hard to quantify it, right? But at least you're like, okay, I've exhausted that avenue. And that's, I think, really important is, you know, like you're saying, when people do a budget, it's not just production. Just the same with producing, it's not just production. You have a whole nother 2, 3, however many years down the line of this project of marketing. And sometimes it's just you there at the computer on social media,
Exactly.
you know,
And
doing the
so
posts. Most of the time, that's what it is.
with the Reddit post, it was kind of funny because and I think a lot of that too is that, like I said, our demographic isn't a Reddit demographic. Reddit is a lot of probably young men for the most part. I mean, with many young women as well. But definitely a lack of
No,
people
but you're right.
over probably 35 or 40, I think, who aren't necessarily internet whizzes, don't Reddit. And funnily enough, excuse me. Thank you.
Bless you.
Funnily enough, I wasn't even on Reddit until one of my more tech savvy friends was like, "Hey, you need to get into Reddit because it's been big for the Thunder Road people." And I was like, "Oh, you're right. That's a good
I was
idea."
just gonna say Thunder Road is kind of the main example that people are using
And
for Reddit.
whether it's
So
Reddit or
yeah.
whether it's Twitter and whether it's just this indie, sort of film world, whether it's, Jim on Twitter who makes some great stuff and runs the Short to Feature Lab and whoever it is on these different platforms, I see overwhelmingly this sense of, it took me years, but I finally just did my first project. It took me, a few months to put it together, but I just shot my first movie on an iPhone. And I think that that environment and that atmosphere, no matter where you are, what you're doing, is great. And I like that there are avenues for people to share things, and the quality of the work is seriously incredibly high. But at the same time, I get annoyed with the amount of it because it seems to trick people into thinking that whenever they're ready to succeed, whenever they're ready to stop, doing learning experiences, that an iPhone is the way that they can do that, or a DSLR can lead them to that, or they can go and shoot as much as they can, and they get the pat on the back for being that maverick filmmaker. And I think that at the end of the day, my the one thing that I just keep coming away with it, looking at all these social media sites and the likes and the comments and the support, is you just can't fall into that. You can't let that dictate what you make, because the group think is wrong.
This is also interesting, because I just love, I love it when there are other people that are as into that's the business side of things as I am, even though I like to consider myself more of like a creative first. Business for me is just so fun because, like, again, that's how I grew up. Like, that's where my family comes from. But I always like to just, I find a lot of comfort in the fact knowing that truly, regardless of numbers, like, your story has to be so good. Like, you cannot be successful at this without the other 50% of the component. If anything, it's the other 75% of the component, which is just being a really freaking good storyteller.
And if you can do
And
that,
that other
it's
piece has to
huge.
be
And
great.
I think that that was kind of the other end of Reddit that I think that what you're trying to lead me on to with that question was, I got a lot of flack from one of my first comments before I knew it was kind of gonna, blow up. And so I was just kind of commenting off the cuff and not really checking, spelling, or syntax, which is kind of funny because you rephrase one thing and suddenly people don't jump onto it anymore. So and it was probably one, it was like it, I think it was the top voted comment by the time it was all said and done. It was probably the third or fourth one I had typed when I started the AMA. And it was like, what are your like easy off the top idea tips? And it was like, don't put quality over quantity. Like, don't always think that quality is the way to go. And people were angry for that I would ever suggest
Oh,
that
funny.
quality should not be in the driver's seat. And I think I did like a metaphor. I said something like, your audience should be the passenger of the car. They shouldn't drive the car, and they also shouldn't be in the trunk. But they if they could create their own movie and watch it themselves, they would. But they can't. That's your job. That's why you're in the driver's seat. At the same time, they're not in the trunk because you're not driving for you. You are driving for them. You want them to enjoy the drive. You want them to be, in the passenger seat so they can tell you where they would like to turn. And so it was just this crazy, theoretical debate that just spawned from the post. Still
Still
controversial to this
controversial.
day. Still get messages of love and hate over it. And in the end, I'm right. So it's okay. But it's something that I
Love
think
it.
was refreshing for a lot of the social media filmmakers, because there is so much of that support, and there's so much of the just shoot it on an iPhone and just go out there. And that's a lot of the information that I tried to put into. I put together a little book that's titled Film One, and it's I put it on Amazon, and it's like $5, $6. It's super cheap, and it's just kind of like, okay, don't go shoot it on an iPhone, or shoot it on an iPhone, and when you're ready to stop doing that, pick up this book and here's how we did The Last Whistle, and here's how hopefully, you can too.
Well, and that's the thing too. It's like, speaking of quality, it's like, okay, like, yeah, just don't shoot the last whistle on an
Exactly.
iPhone, right? Like, if you're going to shoot an iPhone thing, like, it has to be the
Yeah, and make sure
iPhone
that the
thing,
quality
right? And
is
that's
distributed. I we had, Last Whistle has not an A-list lead, but someone that people know. We don't have 100 football players on the field, but we
and
have more
talented.
than 5 or 10. It's got everything in The Last Whistle is in proportion to everything else. There's no part of the movie that
That's
you say, oh,
important.
I the rest of the movie looks bad now because the quality of that part was so good, or the rest of the movie, it's like, or that the lack of quality in this one scene distracts me from the whole rest of the movie. I really tried to make sure that, like, it whether it was the score or the title design or whatever it was, it's like everything has to be a C plus and nothing can be better than an A minus, just because otherwise,
Well, if that's the movie
exactly.
you're making, right? And that's the thing to know is like you just got to be clear and the voice has to be clear. There's another a movie I watched recently, another $100,000 movie from back in the day. Do you know if you've ever heard of Britt Marling? Do you watch the OA at all?
No, I actually I know the OA, but I'm not familiar.
So Britt Marling, she's one of the creators of the OA, and then she's an actress and a
She's also
writer.
my
She's
best friend, and you just
very, very smart
insulted
person. Yeah, well, I wish. No. Yeah, she's kind of the best thing of all time. But anyway, no, she's really great. The reason I bring her up is she's very much someone of that very like indie film mind frame. Like she's a creator in that world where she's made stuff big budget, but a lot of the stuff she's created has also been very, very small and done so well. One of them is Another Earth, which the director of that was, oh, Mike Cahill. And he's done bigger and better stuff now, but that is a great movie too, where it reminds me a lot of yours, completely different stories. I mean, one is like dramatic and sad and slightly
And the other is
supernatural,
Another
but you think to yourself,
Earth.
yeah, and that one's, and then another is an, yes, exactly. But it's a movie that, oh, it had to be made for 100,000 because that's what fits this movie, you know? And that's where I feel like it's thinking about budget and thinking about quality. And that movie, like so much of it's out of focus and like it's noisy at night, right? So people can look at that and say, like, what the fuck? You know, like quality's terrible. And it's like, but it works, you know? And the story's good and they had production value in a car crash. So, like, I don't
Well,
focus on that other stuff. And that's where it's important
we
to be
had the
like,
debate when we went into Last Whistle, and it's, hey, we can get anamorphics for we can get anamorphics for $1,200 for the whole 2 weeks. And it was like, okay, well, that is within our budget, and that would be awesome. Our audience, which is like a Friday Night Lights audience, does not know the difference between a normal lens and anamorphics. Like, and I realized, like, yes, the Florida Project shot all anamorphic because people who watch the Florida Project are gonna salivate over seeing all those little pieces of lens refraction in one stupid shot. People that are watching my movie, it like the money is not going to be the money's not spent well on them. It's we're spending it on us. And there's a place for that, but at a certain point, spend your money on your audience and take yourself out of the equation unless, it is an extremely personal film. And my advice would be don't go make an extremely personal film for your first project because it'll hit,
No.
or fund it
Or fund it
yourself.
yourself. If you're gonna do that, my thing is, by all means, but like just don't spend someone else's money on it unless it's something where other people have said, this is worth me spending money on. And it's like very well risk managed. And maybe you've got a producer on there that's super, super experienced. There's obviously exceptions to everything, but overall, I would say, yeah, don't do your passion. Like, don't make something without any audience in
And
mind,
then,
of course,
and
and
my
not made
last
for
like
them.
big thing, and this is like my pet peeve is, I actually even on like big television show productions, I get really angry when a shoot goes over 12 hours, and it happens more on the indie stuff than others. But I've been on like a Netflix production where I'm talking to a PA. And they're like, yeah, I'm not getting paid overtime. So I finished last night at 2 a.m. and now we're here at 7. And it's like,
Oh,
whoa.
most of the big dogs are the worst. Most of the big dogs are the worst. I remember on our movie, so we our lead was a kid, so we actually would shoot pretty much every day under 11 hours. There was one day because it included wrapping out of a giant school. It took 14 hours, one day, right? Second meals, overtime paid, right? Done. That was an unspoken thing.
But
But it was amazing where I'm like, these kids who have been on Disney are like, oh no, this is one of the more
yeah,
professional shoots
exactly.
that have been run. I'm like,
I mean,
what?
I was on a set where
What?
the it, and I my overall takeaway here isn't necessarily safety, but I was definitely on a set where safe. This was a big set too. Safety was not taken as a priority, and somebody got severely
Ugh, I
injured
hate that.
at the end of the shoot. And I was just sitting there like I saw this coming from 100 miles away, and you're just lucky it wasn't. You're
It's
just lucky
so
it wasn't
not
Jessica
worth it.
Alba because otherwise you'd be in deep, deep trouble.
Oh my God. That happened on not that's I mean, not anything where it's like safety where something did happen after the fact, but something where like make a long story short, on a very, very low budget thing. I was not producing on it. But yeah, like a gun was whipped out, right? From someone that they found to be an extra. And there was a kid in the thing, regardless if there's a kid or not. I'm like, is that a loaded gun? And they're like, oh, you bet it is, you know? And I actually threw the producer off the set. You know, I was like second ACing. So I was like, yeah, no, this is not. Because people they think, oh, but it's good for the shot, or we need, like,
it's unloaded here, I've got all the shells anyone in my would hand. Think oh, that wait, making a move,
yeah, hold on. Like, just the thought that anyone would think that, like, safety is less of a priority than making the movie how you see it in your head is mind-boggling to me, because I'm just like, and I think it's a movie.
So anyway, the overall thing that I think is really shocking to people is if and I think this was a thing I also got a lot of questions for on Reddit, was it was a lot of people saying, how'd you do this so cheaply without paying everybody nothing? And my response was, well, we paid people for their time, and I asked them, like, how much is this worth for your time? And they would say, like, don't, like, this, you know, if you work me long, you know, if you're paying me this much and you work me for longer than 8 hour shoot day, I'm gonna be PO'd. And I was like, and that was kind of what I came away with, was I was like, you know what? We're going to do 8 to 10 hour shoot days, and we're going to do 12, 13 days. And there's going to be a day in the middle that's like a 5-6 hour shoot day. And that kept everybody really cool and got everybody a lot of sleep. And we were a small crew. And I think that if I am on a shoot that goes over 10 or 11 hours, the work suffers. It's not good work at that point. If you can't get your stuff in, and I even would include load in and load out in the 11 or 12 hours. Like, stop, don't base it off your actors. Mm-hmm. Base it off the first person on set and the last. Yeah. You know, make sure that, you know, because that is
the rules. Actually, those are the actual union rules. That's how it's supposed to go. Like, and listen, I get it. Stuff happens, but like you said from the very beginning, it's communication. And the worst thing is people hate being swindled and they hate being disrespected. And that goes across the board, where it's your crew or whether it's your investors. And if you from the get-go are like, these are the parameters that I'm willing to set, do you agree with them? They sign something that says yes, we're all on the same page. If there is one outlier incident where you are going to have to stray from that a bit, you bring it to them first, say, is this okay? If it's not, no big deal. You don't have to do it. But if you can do it this one time, that would be great. And this is how I'm going to compensate. That's all anyone really wants, is they want to feel like they're being respected and they've got good communication. And that's just how you lead a
freaking team. It's all about leadership.
You know, outside of all the creative and budget stuff, like, that's also, that's just how you get production.
That's the name of the game.
Yeah. Well, Rob, you sound like you know what you're talking about.
Thank you.
That's all I want, is just a little validation at the end of the day. Yeah,
if you could just.
And someone to tell me I know what I'm doing.
David, and I could share that to everybody in my extended family and my in-laws and let them know.
Yes. I'm not crazy. Well, yeah. No, this has been really, really great. I appreciate this so much. And yeah, keep us up to date on, like, on what you're doing. I'll be following through social media, and if there's something else, and, you know, Reddit, and if there's something else that is, you know, a cool piece of information or something that you come across that's maybe an obstacle that you overcome.
Yeah,
and
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at MadSmatter is my username. That's MadSmatter, like the Mad Hatter, but my last name is Smat. And my new movie is called, for now, the working title is What Right? And we can be found on Facebook and Instagram through What Right Movie. And it's Walmart themed.
Awesome.
And it's gonna be a fun one, and I'm gonna self distribute it if coronavirus keeps up.
Okay, cool. And if it does keep up, which, you know, it kind of looks like it might, would love to talk to you about that process. Perfect. All right. Well, have a great rest of your day. I'm sure it's packed full of fun activities inside. And
thank you, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Producer Bootcamp podcast. For more information on the Producer Bootcamp and to send in your questions, visit the Jax Productions website at www.jaxmakesmovies.com.